You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Since early 2012, several insurgent groups have been fighting a campaign against the Malian government for independence in northern Mali. The rebels are fighting to make an independent homeland for the Tuareg people. They had taken control of the region by April 2012, but earlier this year, France and some other NATO powers began a military intervention in the West African nation, and that intervention was deemed a success by the French government. And just this month, the French Parliament voted to extend that involvement. Joining us now to discuss all this is Roger Annis. Roger is a coordinator of the Canada-Haiti Action Network, and his most recent article on Mali can be found at his blog, A Socialist in Canada. Hi, Roger, and welcome back to Red Eye.
Good morning. It's good to be with you.
What was the significance of the vote, this recent vote in the French Parliament relating to Mali?
Well, I think it was two things of note. Firstly, it clarifies that France's claim that it's in Mali for a short term just to help out the Malian people with this problem they're having in the north of the country is now shown to be a lie. France made plans for the long haul in Mali, and that's essentially what they voted in the parliament. The vote was on April 22nd. Both the houses of the French Parliament, the National Assembly, as well as the Senate, voted to extend France's military intervention in Mali until the end of 2013, but with no end date following that. And then the other thing is simply that the supposed elected representatives of the French people actually took a vote on it. France has been waging war in Mali for 4 months, sorry, 3 months, since the intervention on January 11th, before they even bothered to get around to voting on it. I guess that's how wars are declared these days. They're de facto decisions by executive powers, and then they come to the legislature and say, okay, here's what we've done. Please give us the rubber stamp. So I think, two things of a particular note. And maybe I could add a third, which is that there wasn't a single vote against this proposal to approve and then extend the intervention in Mali. So that's also of some significance, and rather unfortunate significance in that case.
The UN Security Council also has approved a resolution regarding Mali. What's the gist of the UN Security Council resolution?
That's right. The resolution followed the vote in the French Parliament by 3 days, April 25th. Probably not coincidental. I think the Security Council was looking for this safe vote and decision in France before it would proceed. And so it adopted Resolution 2100, the Security Council, that is, which establishes a police and military force for Mali. They are aiming to have this up and running by July 1st. It'll be known by its French acronym as MINUSMA, a very similar name to the Security Council force that's in Haiti, and a lot of other similarities there as well. And this is projected to have around 11,000 soldiers and somewhere around 1,500 police. And so this target date is July 1st. It might be later than that. Things are proving somewhat difficult for them in Mali to put all this together. There's also a parallel French military force that will be outside the direct supervision, shall we say, or direct endorsement of the Security Council, which is a very unique and quite alarming and dangerous situation now. That's part of Mali, and that's important to pay close attention to as well. Now, of course, there have been foreign forces, but this resolution by the UN really kind of formalizes things much more. And again, as with the vote in the French Parliament, we're talking about something that has no end date. Let's recall that in Haiti, it's been 9 years now of a similar UN Security Council military occupation force there.
What was the purpose, just to remind us, of the first intervention by the French, the one that was going to be short and quick?
Yeah, it was. I guess I could correct slightly in your introduction when you spoke of the independence struggle in the north of Mali. France intervened on January 11th to deal with what it said, with what its Mali partner government said was a crisis of national security for Mali in the north of the country, and specifically that what I would call right-wing Islamic forces had come to take control of the north of the country. This is a decades-long struggle in Mali by the different peoples that live in the north of the country that include the Tuareg, but also involve other minority nationalities, for, if not independence, certainly some form of political autonomy. And so there's really, in just the recent years, a failure of the Malian government to respond to these historic demands, very long-standing demands for political, social, cultural autonomy. And so it's a result of that failure that the Tuareg peoples, who are kind of a bit of the vanguard of the situation in the north, opted for political independence, which they declared in March of last year, following their defeat of the Mali army. The Mali army had been waging effectively a war for several years to try and put down this autonomy movement in the north of the country. So this military defeat of the Mali government in March of early last year, set off a whole cascade of events, which began with the coup d'etat on March 22nd of last year in Mali by Mali's military against the country's elected government, and then the plans immediately set into motion by France for the intervention that came about on January 11th of this year. So that's sort of the backdrop. It's a very long-standing historic struggle for autonomy, which the Mali government has opposed, and France, as well as the other major powers in the region, have opposed as well.
So how successful, then, has been the French intervention since January in the past 3 months?
I would say on their terms, they call it a success. They have certainly beaten back the Islamic forces. I mean, because what happened after the coup d'etat in Mali last year, and then the declaration of independence that followed a couple of weeks later by the Tuareg-led National Movement for the Liberation of Azawad, non-religious inspired forces, particularly those organized around the MNLA, lost control of the situation. A lot of interesting parallels to what's happening to Syria today, where very well-financed, very well-armed right-wing Islamist groups have sort of moved into a political vacuum and pushed aside what I would say would be the more legitimate political representatives of the people of the north of Mali. They pushed aside the non-Islamic forces, including the MNLA in the north of the country. And so that's who France has been fighting against. They've been fighting against these Islamic forces that essentially moved into the political vacuum. Whether there would have been a French intervention without the Islamic forces coming into the country is an interesting question. Possible it may not have been, because certainly the actions of the Islamists were very alarming. They essentially had tried to impose a very strict Taliban-type rule on the north of Mali, and so it was pretty easy for France to sell its military intervention to the Malian people and to the world as being an operation to save the Malian people from these Islamic-inspired forces. So France has pushed back these forces. I mean, there's ongoing conflict. That's why France is going to maintain a permanent military presence in the country. But they certainly haven't solved the long-standing social and economic and political problems. Mali is one of the poorest countries of the world. The north of Mali is the poorest of the poor. This is one of the complaints of the people in the north, is that they haven't been given any kind of equal treatment by the Mali government or by the rest of the world that's intervening in Mali. So certainly they have not provided the mystical stability for kinds of foreign investors that are interested in moving into Mali. And actually, if you read the French press closely, they're very preoccupied, as they put it, that they're into another Afghanistan, another long-term military occupation without any social, economic, political resolution that would have a stable government in place and so forth.
So does that apply that not only have they not stabilized the government, they've not stabilized the military?
That's correct. I mean, they've essentially pushed aside the Mali military. It's, this is a military that overthrew its elected government, so it's hardly a force that France, the U.S., Canada, I should mention. I mean, all the big powers are in there. Europe's in there in a big way. You know, they can hardly be seen to be collaborating closely with the Mali military, so they push it aside. They say they're going to reform it to bring about a, I don't know what the term they use, you know, a respectable military that could stop overthrowing elected governments in the country and so forth. So that part of the puzzle is unresolved, and they don't seem particularly concerned about that. It's actually a complaint on the part of Malian civil society that the country's own army is really just a sort of a two-bit player in this whole thing. I mean, there is an army, for sure, and it's in the north again, and it's once again engaged in human rights violations against the peoples of the north, but it's not, no, it's not like they, you know, have some short-term plan where they're going to have a stable Mali army in place and then they can withdraw. They're not even really even talking in those terms. They're just settling in for the long haul, and they do what, they'll do what they can to build up a Mali army, but it's certainly not the... not even presented in the way they do in Afghanistan, where they've been saying for so many years that, oh, we're just, you know, just around the corner, we have an army, we have a police, and that's going to be able to, you know, effectively control the country for us, and we can withdraw. So, yeah, that part of the puzzle, they don't even seem interested in.
So people are displaced, and are people living in refuge in other countries?
There's a huge humanitarian crisis that accompanies this whole French intervention. It's not necessarily provoked by the intervention or even by the military conflict in the north of the country. Mali is going through climate change and it's also going through periodic drought conditions that have always affected that part of the world, that stretch of territory called the Sahel that just sits below the Sahara Desert itself is kind of semi-desert, so there's terrible drought conditions over recent years, which, you know, happen, and things have to be done to prepare against that, and that hasn't happened. So you have hundreds of thousands of Malians who have already been living, have been displaced by drought and other conditions, and you add, you know, many tens of thousands more as a result of the military conflict, and then grave human rights violations in the north that have accompanied the operations of the Mali army prior to and then since the French intervention. And, you know, Mali is said to be a democracy, but frankly, in throughout the country, it's pretty tenuous, the rule of law for all of the Malian people. So it's, you know, it's a very grave humanitarian crisis with real food emergencies that are now affecting several millions of people, and the humanitarian organizations that are in Mali are extremely concerned about this and have issued issue reports saying, look, this is bad and getting worse, and we want to see some measures taken to protect the people that are the most vulnerable. So that's really you know, quite alarming backdrop to the whole situation in Mali. That's even quite independent of this intense military conflict that's now been going on for a little bit more than a year.
Can we sort of say we've seen the term neocolonialism morph into colonialism?
I think in parts of Africa we're going backwards in history, that it used to be, you know, in the days the African people fought for their independence, for the most part following World War II. They won it. Countries like Mali in 1960 won their independence for, you know, for some period of time had stable, effective governments of varying degrees of success and of accomplishment. This really marked those first couple of decades after the years of independence in the 1950s and 60s. You know, we seem to be going backwards in time, that the big powers of the world in Europe and in North America are just throwing aside the notion of political sovereignty and of democratic self-rule, self-government by countries in Africa, and we're seeing just more and more countries, as, you know, effectively becoming just colonies again. And Mali is a real case in point. They're having a great deal of difficulty in forging a national government that can have a minimum of credibility among the Malian people and also on the international stage. And I could list a string of countries that are going through it. Think of Libya and the intervention of Libya that overthrew its sovereign government, regardless what we might think of the government that was in place and so on. So it's a very concerning trend that's in the continent. Of course, on the other hand, you have things like the Arab Spring uprising in the north of Africa and other developments that show that, you know, there is and will be an ongoing struggle for sovereignty and social justice in the continent. That's also the case in Mali. But we are going through, I think, a very troubling trend now in which we really have to get organized as people in solidarity internationally to work with the African people in helping them to reconquer so much of the political sovereignty that seems to be getting lost in these.
That's a subject we'll definitely pick up in coming interviews. Thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. It's good talking to you.
I've been speaking with Roger Annis. He's coordinator of the Haiti, Canada-Haiti Action Network, and his most recent article on Mali can be found at rogerannis.com.
This podcast was produced by the Red Eye Collective in Vancouver, B.C. If you live in the Vancouver area and are interested in creating alternative radio with us, we'd love to hear from you. Contact us at redeye@coopradio.org.